the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Debate night for the Democrats.
South Carolina is going to determine who the next president of the United States is going to be.
That is our top story at noon. Seven White House hopefuls will take the stage tonight in Charleston, South Carolina. It will be the last debate before Saturday's primary there and the final exchange before Super Tuesday next week.
I have to look at some of the debates and make my final decision on who I'm going to vote for.
Right now, Joe Biden in the lead in South Carolina and the former vice president hoping for a strong win to build momentum heading into Super Tuesday.
You're the ones that sent Bill Clinton to the presidency, and you're the ones that sent Barack Obama to the presidency.
The frontrunner Bernie Sanders still trying to throw water on the political firestorm he created with favorable comments about the late Cuban dictator Fidel Castro.
He formed the Literacy Brigade. You know what? I think teaching people to read and write is a good thing.
The Castro Literacy Program did teach hundreds of thousands of people to read and write in the 1960s, but it was also used to spread communist propaganda. Florida Democrats like Congresswoman Debbie Mukasel Powell blasted Sanders' comments.
Those comments are extremely hurtful to so many people here in my area and very offensive.
Tonight's debate starts at 8 on CBS. President Trump ended his first official visit to India earlier today, where he sounded off on campaign 2020.
Our market will jump thousands and thousands of points if I win. If I don't win, you're going to see a crash like you've never seen before.
A recent CBS News poll shows 65% of respondents think Mr. Trump will win re-election in November.
I don't think there's anybody, frankly, on the other side that's going to be very inspirational.
The president's two-day trip to India included visits to Gandhi's home, the Taj Mahal, and a speech in front of a crowd of 110,000 people. Coronavirus concern, the other big story we're following today. Lawmakers in Washington briefed earlier today about the virus that's infected more than 80,000 people all around the world. Here's Tennessee Republican Lamar Alexander.
The problem is it's very aggressive and it's spreading in other countries. It will inevitably spread here. We want to contain that spread when it comes.
An American drug maker, meantime, has sent a new vaccine to government researchers. Correspondent Vicki Barker continues.
Boston-based Moderna says its new coronavirus vaccine has been sent to the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases outside Washington, with human testing likely to start by late April. 3 months from creation to human testing may sound like a long time, but experts say it's actually a record. A vaccine for an earlier, different coronavirus outbreak in 2002 took about 20 months to get that far. The Institute will know sometime this summer if this new vaccine is both safe and effective.
That's Vicki Barker reporting. President Trump has asked Congress for $2.5 billion in emergency monies to fight the coronavirus. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. must be realistic when it comes to Afghanistan.
We're proud of our gains, but our generals have determined that this war is unlikely to be won militarily without tremendous additional resources. All sides are tired of fighting.
Pompeo expressed hope that a short-term ceasefire will lead to a long-term peace deal with the Taliban.
We've arrived at a historic opportunity for peace. It won't be easy to obtain. We should seize the moment.
Right now, there are roughly 14,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. President Trump is anxious to pull our fighting forces out. Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein hospitalized last night after his conviction on sex abuse charges earlier in the day. The former Hollywood heavyweight complained of chest pains. The actress Rosanna Arquette says justice was served.
You can't do this anymore. This is the beginning. It's a seismic shift in our culture.
Correspondent Matt Piper has more on what's ahead For Harvey Weinstein.
Weinstein will be sentenced in just over 2 weeks on March 11th. The two charges he was convicted of means he could face nearly 30 years in prison. But while the case in New York was going on, prosecutors in Los Angeles charged him with similar rape allegations dating back to 2013.
That's Matt Piper reporting. Mardi Gras celebrations underway in New Orleans. It is Fat Tuesday. Parades all across the Crescent City will go late into the night tonight. Still to come this Tuesday, the Lake Flakes back later this week. Tragic accident in Chautauqua County, New York, and saving the Rumble Ponies in Binghamton.
Well, good afternoon to all. We are looking at some rugged winter weather later this week. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Tuesday, February 25th. All quiet now, folks, but some heavy lake effect snow could be on the way later this week for parts of ski country in western New York.
We'll still get at least a foot of snow down the southern tier areas across the higher terrain.
Steve Welch at the National Weather Service in Buffalo says this snow event will drag on for several days.
It looks like there's potential for this lake effect event to go from Thursday through Saturday, so a multi-day event.
Winter storm watches go up Thursday morning for areas downwind of the Great Lakes by Saturday afternoon. Parts of our listening area could be looking at over a foot of snow. Up and down temperatures this winter, making for some dangerous conditions out on the lakes, ponds, and other ice-covered waterways. Family Life's Jeremy Miller takes a closer look.
Yeah, and as spring approaches, emergency experts say you need to be careful while ice fishing and even more cautious while snowmobiling. Experts say stay away from inlets and outlets because water flowing under the ice makes it unstable. It's expected to cool down again this week, and there will be pressure cracks on the ice, which makes it dangerous, especially for snowmobilers. Anyone going out on the ice should check it out first to make sure it's solid. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Some good tips there. Thank you, Jeremy. A 7-year-old girl has died after a 3-vehicle collision in Chautauqua County, New York. Happened on Route 60 in the town of Pomfret yesterday afternoon. Police say the car Emmeline Wilcox was riding in was rear-ended, then pushed into the path of a tractor-trailer. Wilcox was a first grader at the Casadega Valley Central School District in Sinclairville, New York. Grief counselors on hand at that elementary school today. Local experts are sounding off on the economic impact of the coronavirus.
You and I and anybody else has no idea how bad the coronavirus is really going to get. Every scare is a financial scare.
That's Dan McKeever. He's a professor of economics at Binghamton University.
China is one of the world's largest producers, so if people are getting sick and they're not going to work, global trade will slow down, which means that inputs that American companies need to buy to build cars and houses and things like that are also going to decline.
McKeever says the serious investor needs to weather the coronavirus storm.
The way to avoid making emotional judgments on short-term fluctuations in stock prices is to focus on investing for the long run.
The World Health Organization is close to declaring coronavirus a global pandemic. President Trump wrapping up his 36-hour tour of India with an official state banquet at the Presidential Palace in New Delhi. Earlier in a solo news conference, Mr. Trump talked about the possibility of striking a trade deal with India. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson is hopeful the president's India excursion will result in a trade pact with the world's largest democracy.
The administration's always looking to see what can we open up from the United States into India when it comes to, you know, all the things that we make here, and that's a lot. I also know how important agriculture is. I think that'll be part of the discussion as well. What American commodities can we find markets for in India? You know, it's like we said, trade flows both ways.
The Trump administration did agree to sell $3 billion worth of military helicopters to India. Well, it's not too early to start thinking about your holiday travel plans, especially if you haven't updated your driver's license to real ID. Without that upgrade, you will not be able to fly or enter federal buildings.
It's going to hit home soon to where everybody's going to be rushing to get one.
Starting October 1st, the Real ID law will take effect. According to the experts, 2/3 of drivers have yet to make the upgrade.
Yikes. I mean, I guess that's a bridge that I'll cross when I get to it, but the line was just too long today.
To get your Real ID, you're going to need your current driver's license, Social Security card, 2 documents proving where you live, and plenty of patience at the DMV. St. Bonaventure in Western New York has become the latest university to drop SAT and ACT requirements for admittance.
There's real evidence that these students can come, be successful, graduate on time, and have very successful careers. So all the research points to that.
Bernie Valento, Vice President of Enrollment at St. Bonaventure, he says the university has been losing good students to other colleges that don't require SATs or ACTs. Colleges like Villa Maria in Cheektowaga. Brian Emerson is Vice President of Enrollment there.
The standardized test doesn't tell you a full picture about the student. It tells you whether or not they're good at taking a test or how they did on that particular day when they sat down for the test.
I took the ACTs and SATs, but it really destroyed me. I was so stressed out all the time.
That's Casey Malowski, a sophomore at Villa Maria. She says a student is much more than just a test score.
And I think, honestly, when it comes to, like, getting into a good college, I think colleges should be a lot more focused on, like, the quality of a student rather than just a number on the paper that the test represents.
40% of colleges and universities today all across the country pulling the plug on SAT and ACT test scores. A new Siena College poll shows more New Yorkers against the state's bail reform laws. Those laws got rid of cash bail for most nonviolent offenses.
Support for the bail law continues to tumble. In fact, opposition continues to grow. Right now, 33%, only a third of New Yorkers think that the new bail law is good for New York. 59%, a clear majority, think that the new bail law is bad for New York.
That's pollster Steve Greenberg. He says when it comes to the state's other controversial law, New York is split down the middle.
The green light law giving New York driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants, New Yorkers are evenly divided right now. 48% support that law, 48% oppose that law.
And as for legalizing recreational marijuana in New York, Greenberg says public opinion in the state hasn't changed on that issue the past 2 years. 55% want recreational pot, 40% don't. Voters in Pennsylvania have a new tool to use as they get ready to head to the polls. The Department of State has launched 67 new web pages, one for each county, where voters can learn details about their county's voting system and how to use it. Each web page includes a description of the county's voting system, along with photos and videos that guide voters with a step-by-step process on how to use that system. Net neutrality heating up once again in Harrisburg.
The internet, in my opinion, and I think others, should be open and accessible.
Democratic State Senator Larry Farnese has introduced legislation requiring internet providers give equal access to all online content. Joshua Steger is with the group Open Technology Institute.
Without net neutrality, ISPs are free to divide the internet into fast lanes for those who can afford it and slow lanes for everyone else.
The FCC voted to end net neutrality 3 years ago, leading several states to pass their own net neutrality bills. The original document giving William Penn permission to establish a colony in Pennsylvania will go on display March 8th at the State Museum in Harrisburg. That should be neat to look at. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
Admission will be free that day in honor of Charter Day. Other rare documents going on display include Pennsylvania's Act for the Gradual Abolition of Slavery from 1780 and the state's ratification of the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution from 1869. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thanks, Terry. U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer in Binghamton yesterday to try and save the city's AA baseball franchise from the chopping block. Schumer met with local, state, and federal officials, as well as representatives with the Binghamton Rumble Ponies and the New York Mets. They all got together at NYSEG Field.
And we all agreed that our goal, not achieved yet, but now we have seen, at least we've gotten, moving down the track. We all agreed that the Rumble Ponies must stay in Binghamton.
The Rumble Ponies, among 42 minor league franchises that could lose their big league affiliation. Sunny time, 2 minute drill.
Yeah, let's start on the ice. Buffalo Sabres busy getting Dominic Cahoon at the trade deadline from the Penguins for Connor Sheary and Evan Rodriguez. Pens also get Patrick Marleau. Sabres picking up Wayne Simmonds from New Jersey in a trade. Islanders getting Jean-Gabriel Pujol from the Senators, then signing him to a 6-year contract extension. Rangers keeping Chris Kreider for a 7-year contract extension. Flyers picking up Nate Thompson in a trade from the Canadiens, and Derek Grant a trade from the Ducks. And Toronto picking up Cal Rosen from the Avalanche for Michael Hutchinson. To the NBA, after trading their head coach John Beilein away, suddenly, the Cavaliers hot, winning for the third time in 4 games, beating the Heat in overtime, 125-119. In Houston, James Harden poured in 37. Rockets knock off the Knicks, 123-112. Joel Embiid scored a career-high 49. 76ers beat the Hawks, 129-112.
I've had that mindset of just being aggressive, just trying to dominate.
Then you have Bradley Beal. He became the first player to score 50-plus points on consecutive nights since Kobe Bryant in 2007. But the Wizards lost again, falling to the Bucks 137-134 in overtime. He says the scoring doesn't matter. On this day, they honored Kobe Bryant.
Because at the end of the day, when I'm gone from here, you guys aren't going to remember that, nor are you going to care. And I feel like that's how we feel with Kobe. So, you know, I feel like the impact that you leave on others and your teammates and everybody around you is what's most important.
Beal's 55 is one night after scoring 53 in a loss to the Bulls. In women's college basketball, Oregon's Sabrina Ionescu spoke at the memorial service for Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, then history, becoming the first player, male or female, in NCAA history to reach 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 1,000 assists in the Ducks' win against number 4 Stanford.
I mean, that one was for him. To do it on 2/24/20 is huge. We had talked about it in the preseason. I can't really put that into words, and he's looking down and really proud of me.
For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Tuesday edition of the Noon Report, debate night tonight in South Carolina, fighting the coronavirus and free flapjacks at IHOP.
We hear it over and over. Young people are leaving the church. A new study clarifies why and could help parents and pastors better pass on their faith. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. You know what I'm happy to leave behind in the 2010s? All those headlines about how millennials are killing everything. Millennials are killing mayonnaise. Millennials are killing golf. Millennials are killing real estate because they spend all their money on avocado toast. Yes, those are real headlines. Well, sadly, there's at least one millennial-related headline we can't leave in the last decade. Millennials are killing churches. According to Pew Research, 4 in 10 Americans between the ages of 23 and 38 now say they are religiously unaffiliated. While part of the hemorrhaging is explained by the 40-year decline in mainline Protestant bodies, evangelicals are not off the hook. We cannot say that conservative theology in and of itself is enough to shrink-proof your church. Young people have left evangelical churches and are still leaving, and new data can fix some of our wrong thinking about it. For instance, I've heard for years that young people who leave church during their college years will come back, as if nothing can or should be done about it. Now let's set aside for a moment what should be obvious, that we should never be okay with anyone ever rejecting Christ or his church. According to a study by the American Enterprise Institute, millennials who drop out of church often end up staying away permanently. Maybe in the past, young adults who wandered away would tend to become religious again when they got married or had kids, but things have changed, and there seems to be 3 main differences. First, many young adults today who leave the church never had strong religious ties to begin with. Second, those who drop out and have gotten married tend to have a spouse who is also not religious. Now, for obvious reasons, this makes them less likely to go through the effort of making it to Sunday services or raising their families in the faith. And finally, millennial church dropouts are unlikely to view religion as a necessary part of teaching their own children morality. This is quite a change from past generations, which often returned to church after a youthful rumspringa because they had kids and they wanted them to grow up to be good people. Now, another claim that I often hear these days is that growing numbers of dropouts are actually a good thing because that separates true believers from cultural Christians. Now, I get the spirit behind the claim, but it's misguided in at least 2 ways. First, God very often uses the culture that we're born in to introduce people to Christ. Think about it. Are you more or less likely to hear about your need for Jesus in a culture with a church on every corner or in a culture in which churches have been turned into bars? And second, the gospel still has an effect on those who come to church for the wrong reasons, like social acceptability. So what lesson can we take from all of this new data? First, the bad news. We really are losing a generation of young churchgoers, and they're probably not coming back, at least not if we stay the current course. And then the good news. We now know with even greater clarity the difference that parents make. And we can apply that with members of Generation Z, parents who prioritize church as a central part of their family life, who teach their children to take Christianity seriously, and who encourage them to marry fellow believers. They have the best chances of seeing not only their children, but also their grandchildren in the pews beside them. And that's why I'm excited to invite you to this year's Wilberforce Weekend, which is May 14th through the 17th in Washington, D.C., and especially to a very special equipping event on Friday morning of that weekend, where we focus on how to prepare the next generation of believers to face the challenges of our culture. Joining me for this special training event will be Sean McDowell, Brett Kunkel, J. Warner Wallace, and Natasha Crane. Come to WilberforceWeekend.org to learn more and to register. Again, that's WilberforceWeekend.org.
20 minutes past the hour. Winter weather on the way. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We've got a very complicated weather pattern with multiple moving parts. But the main issue will be a storm taking shape in Texas that'll ride into central New York on Thursday, bringing with it heavy rain, heavy snow, and then high winds and lake effect of some import. In forecast form for this afternoon, cloudy. With a bit of rain, some elevation snowflakes, and temperatures changing little. Cloudy tonight and tomorrow with rain and wet snow. 2 to 4 inches of snow will accumulate tonight into tomorrow over the higher elevations of western New York. Low tonight, low 30s. The high tomorrow, mid-30s to the mid-40s. Rain flips to snow tomorrow night. That snow could be heavy at times for some. Then on Thursday, windy with flurries, blowing snow, and areas of lake snow. Temperatures dropping. We'll spend much of the afternoon in the 20s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, if you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today. Tuesday, February 25th, Democratic frontrunner Bernie Sanders ready to get slammed ahead of tonight's debate in Charleston, South Carolina. The Vermont senator under fire for praising the late Cuban dictator Fidel Castro over his program that taught people to read and write in the 1960s. Political analyst Rebecca Kaplan.
I wouldn't necessarily expect him to come out tonight and apologize for those comments. I would expect him to say it's a mixed record. There's obviously all these terrible things, but also look at these literacy programs. I don't think we've gotten any indication so far that he's going to walk those back tonight, but he certainly is going to get some criticism from his fellow Democrats.
Tonight's debate will be the final one before Saturday's South Carolina primary. It's also going to be the final time the White House hopefuls confront one another on stage ahead of next week's all-important Super Tuesday. Wrapping up a two-day visit to India earlier today, President Trump sounded off on this year's election. Mr. Trump insists his campaign got no help from Russia.
I want no help from any country, and I haven't been given help from any country.
The president pointed to reports that Bernie Sanders has been briefed by the intelligence community about Russian efforts to intervene.
And they told Bernie about something having to do with they want Bernie to win. They did not tell me.
During today's news conference in India, the president said none of the Democrats running in this year's race have been able to inspire people the way he has. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo defending the U.S. response to the coronavirus outbreak.
As the president made clear, our first priority is to protect the homeland. We've imposed prudent travel restrictions and strong travel advisories to slow the spread of the virus to the United States.
Pompeo says the U.S. is doing what it can as fast as it can.
All known American carriers of the coronavirus are in isolation and treatment, and healthy travelers who travel from high-risk locations were placed in mandatory quarantine upon return to the United States.
President Trump today asking Congress for $2.5 billion in emergency funding to fight coronavirus. The man who led Egypt for 30 years has died. Hosni Mubarak was 91.
February 11, 2011, 18 days of Egyptian people power protests achieved what would have been unthinkable even months earlier. They forced President Hosni Mubarak from office.
It's like a dream come true, and it happened so suddenly.
I am very, very happy.
President Obama said Egypt would never be the same without the man who held an iron grip on the nation for nearly 30 years. But he also warned the future could be difficult.
This is not the end of Egypt's transition. It's a beginning.
But the death of Mubarak brings one long, painful chapter to a close.
Howard Ehrenstein reporting 24 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life. welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Ben Gehring from Jamestown, New York. He's the chaplain with the Jamestown Police Department. His job? Be a friend to the men and women in blue.
The typical day is relationship. I think more than anything, they're just are looking for just authentic relationship. There's about 62 of them. It's taken me and will take me a while to get to know everybody.
Yeah, you got some time. So you mentioned you get to do some ride-alongs with the officers.
Yeah. Oh, those are exciting. Yeah. It depends maybe on what shift and with who, but it's, you know, they have a lot of activity. So it can range from pullovers to a lot of domestic violence, unfortunately. And, you know, they've got their drugs and the guns and all that unfortunate stuff in the city.
So you get to visit with these officers in a setting that the general public usually doesn't get to see them in. What does a police officer tell you that they wouldn't tell me or someone else in the general population?
Well, we talk about their clientele. You know, I think probably the byproduct of the job is they have to find a way to laugh a lot. So they do have fun. It's been, you know, they have fun with each other, which has been great to see because they're definitely a community.
So you've been the chaplain for a couple months now. In the short time you've been there, Ben, have you had the opportunity to witness to some of these men and women?
Going in, it wasn't my goal to, and I don't think it was an expectation to proselytize. It was really the expectation to create an opportunity for outlet, to help diffuse and decompress, to learn how to cope with some of the hard things that they have to deal with and to see. So a huge part of that is building the relationship so that they know they can have a trusting outlet.
In your visits with the officers, are you finding a constant theme with them?
It's so hard to embody society when it's so fragmented and unhealthy. I mean, domestic violence, for instance, they see the same people over and over. In a city, you think that, oh, geez, you know, that wouldn't happen, but it's real. They come to know the people.
You're listening to Hometown Heroes on Family Life. Our guest this week, Ben Gehring from Jamestown, New York, the chaplain with the Jamestown Police Department. And Ben, how do you help these officers kind of make sense of the, well, garbage they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis?
Well, honestly, I think that's a learning curve. Coming in to this side of serving the city is different than the past 7 years has been really serving the population of the city, and now it's serving the peacekeepers of the city. Learning about what crisis looks like and crisis intervention and even suicide prevention, it's a learning curve.
You mentioned the word peacekeepers, and a lot of times when you think of cops, you think of them coming in with guns ablazing and diffusing situations that way, but a lot of times it's just keeping the peace and using a calm voice and being a calming influence. More times than not, that's how tense situations are diffused, correct?
Yeah, seeing these men and women on the force show up to really challenging situations, and the peacekeeper comes out, and it's just amazing to watch them diffuse tense moments, sometimes simple or complex arguments between people. It's not an act of force. It's the act of peace that comes out. It's just really amazing.
What do you enjoy most about being chaplain at Jamestown Police Department?
Being shoulder to shoulder with people who stand for justice, actually watching them really love a community. They oftentimes might not even realize it, but they're ministering every day to a community that if they didn't have them would be functioning out of bounds. Law enforcement as a whole has been getting a negative light. They stand a gap between dark and light.
And it's interesting, Ben, you use the word ministry to describe what a police officer does. I never would have used that word to describe their job.
Right. And that's really true, because, you know, ministry isn't waiting for people to come to us. Ministry is us being ready to go to them and to just be present. We were talking about the word ministry, and we can just throw it around. Well, I don't show up at their office and go, here, I'm here to do ministry. I show up because I want to just kind of disappear into what they do, because the last thing they need is some goofy preacher riding around with them going, oh, geez, you know, do you know about Jesus? No, I'll let them see Jesus because it is ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to do ugly things.
Sure.
But I do know that if I show up with love and mercy and peace, just like they do, I'll have an opportunity to be their friend and to be there when they need it.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that's the goal.
That's Ben Gehring from Jamestown, New York, this week's Hometown Hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
The big show comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We've got a very complicated weather pattern with multiple moving parts. But the main issue will be a storm taking shape in Texas that'll ride into central New York on Thursday, bringing with it heavy rain, heavy snow, and then high winds and lake effect of some import. In forecast form for this afternoon, cloudy. With a bit of rain, some elevation snowflakes, and temperatures changing little. Cloudy tonight and tomorrow with rain and wet snow. 2 to 4 inches of snow will accumulate tonight into tomorrow over the higher elevations of western New York. Low tonight, low 30s, the high tomorrow, mid-30s to the mid-40s. Rain flips to snow tomorrow night. That snow could be heavy at times for some. Then on Thursday, windy with flurries, blowing snow, and areas of lake snow. Temperatures dropping. We'll spend much of the afternoon in the 20s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, thanks for the heads up. Finally at noontime, free flapjacks. IHOP celebrating National Pancake Day with a free short stack of flapjacks. Till 7 o'clock tonight, folks, the fundraiser generates millions of dollars for charity. IHOP spokeswoman Stephanie Peterson.
While we give away millions of free pancakes on one day, we also collect donations for Children's Miracle Network hospitals and other local partners.
The giving back, it's what it's all about, folks. Other beneficiaries of National Pancake Day include the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, as well as Shriners Hospitals. IHOP restaurants have been doing this for 15 years, and they've raised $30 million for pediatric cancer research. The hope this year is to raise $4 million for charity today. So when you go and get those free stack of flapjacks, make sure you give and give generously. That is the world we live in this Tuesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.